business write-off.
Father, where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around. Io's house in the middle of our street. Io's house.
Isle's house. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. Follow the pod at Isle's house. Subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Spotify. Go to YouTube, hit that subscribe button, help us grow there. Follow us on social media, on TikTok. And I think that's it. Well, no, we got the hats. We got the hats. We're going to point, if you're on YouTube, QR code to the Isle's House merch store. I'm rocking the Casa hat. Rocco's rocking the Casa hat. A bit rusty. It is cottage chime for insiders like myself, although unfortunately I just returned home from the cottage and it was not a particularly relaxing time at the cottage. Honestly, these last 10 days, unquestionably, I was busier than Matthew Darche. Unquestionably. And that's what we're going to talk about. Rocco, how are we doing today?
Doing well, getting through the summer. You know, it always goes quick. I feel like we look forward to the season, which actually starts earlier this year than probably it ever has, at least in our lifetimes. I don't know about back in the day, but late September start. I feel like we look ahead. Oh my God, it's 2 months. It's so far away, but it always just flies. Summer's a good time. It's easy to keep busy. So just here to recap some of the Isles offseason, at least so far. If more happens, I don't expect too much, but if it does, obviously we'll hop back on. But just a nice little draft free agency recap app today.
And little it will be, because not much to talk about in that realm. Matthew Darche, 1 year after drafting Matthew Schaefer first overall, had one pick in the top 100. He selected Malte Gustafsson. Is that correct? Pronunciation?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sounded good to me.
All right, 13th overall. Rocco, you're the draft guy. Why should I care about a big guy who doesn't put up a ton of points?
Well, he's 6'4", almost 6'5". I believe he measured in at 6'4.5", and skates really well. I feel like the one thing that often pops up about these bigger players, the Ethan Belchets last year on Porter Martone or guys of that size, they typically don't skate that well. Gustafsson's an excellent skater, and while he doesn't put up a ton of points, and he doesn't seem like he has a ton of offensive upside, that skating is just so good. The edge work's so good. He has the potential to be really an elite defenseman of the Pelech, Jacob Slavin type. I don't know if he'll ever be that good, but that's kind of the archetype that you're looking at here. And, you know, it's one of those things where the Islanders are definitely most stacked on the left side when it comes to the prospect pool. Like, you have, obviously, Schaefer, who, although took the world by storm, is still a young player. He's only 18 years old. You have Aitchison, you just drafted last year. Over at Cornell, you have a prospect, a lot of people that pay close attention are excited about, in Xavier Velu, I believe you pronounce his name. So they definitely are stacked on the left side. Isaiah George as well, young player. So you knew in order to make this pick, it had to really be the best guy on their board. And I think most people agreed the way the board fell, Gustafsson was the best player there. Like, I wouldn't have minded Belchets. I wouldn't have minded a couple of the forwards, but I really think this was the safest and probably the smartest pick. And it's just, it has potential to just be a nightmare for opposing the opposition, because when you think about it, you put Schaefer out there one shift, and then the next one, a guy like Gustafsson's hopping over the boards at 6'4", really good skater, potential to be elite defenseman. Not fun for other teams. Now, are they going to need to find pieces elsewhere? Of course. But I'm always of the mind, just take the best player available at the top of the draft. Although it may not seem that way, I do feel like we're still somewhat early in the development of this prospect pool. Like, I think we're going to need a couple more years coming along here to really add to it and try to find elite players. So in this position, I thought it was a great pick. As you said, that was the only pick in the top 100. After that,
your favorite pick in the draft.
My favorite pick in the draft, no bias, just goes to my alma mater. So Lincoln Cooney, he's just a really, like, big body, solid skater. Another one. He got, I don't know if he has the potential to put up a ton of points, but just exactly what the Islanders needed in this pool. The next two picks, actually, with Vladimir. I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation.
No, you're not, because we got audio of how to pronounce it.
Yes, we do. Dravetsky. And if I'm wrong, he will really be after me. But our buddy out in Europe told us how to pronounce that one. But that's actually, after Gustafsson, my favorite pick is Dravetsky, because although he doesn't – it's funny because the first two picks are big defensive guys, skate well, maybe not a ton of offensive upside. And then with the fifth round pick, you're hoping he's Russian or basically a version of Tony DeAngelo, where he could kind of play a lot of good offense and maybe not the best in his own end, but – I like the pick. I feel like he has a lot of upside, Dravetsky. And I really didn't – I'm going to be honest with you. I was following the draft pretty closely, but obviously as you get to rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, you're kind of just like peeking in every now and then. And when we picked him, I was kind of shocked because I just – I figured he was off the board already, to be honest with you. I didn't even realize he was sitting there. So I thought that was a really good pick. And they just kind of wanted to hammer home the fact that they had no right-handed defenseman in the pool. So that just go for it. Take a shot on a few. If one hits, it's great. That's how I feel about all mid to late round picks. After your first round pick.
Yeah, he's from New Hampshire.
Yeah, he's got like a interesting background. He's from New Hampshire. He has like multiple passports. For the development camp, he wasn't able to get over because of passport complications. So there's like a ton of stuff going on with him, but he's definitely a solid prospect. And no, it'd be fun to watch. Like, that's all you ask for the later round guys. Just give us some talent, give us some positions of need, players to watch. So it wasn't the high end picks. Like, you know, sometimes you get a guy drop into the second round that you say, oh, he could have went top 15, top 20. That's how some people felt about Prokhorov last year. But, you know, it's still guys to watch. Keeps it interesting. And again, you went left-handed D first. And then the next two picks, you go right-handed D. And then after that, I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about those guys, but I feel like,
you mean you don't know a ton about Artyom Matyuk of the MHL?
I know the name. I haven't watched any tape at all, to be honest with you. It's tough to get clips of the Russian players as well sometimes, but sure, we could get it from our guy, Mark D, who's all over Russia, watching the – not all over Russia, but watching the Russian prospects from the United States. So, yeah, listen, and if anyone after Gustafsson works out, it's a huge W. That's how you have to look at it. If they're –
well, yeah.
NHL players after that, that's a win. So I like the draft. I like the philosophy. I like that clearly Darsh listens to his scouts. Not every GM does, as we've heard stories about Garth Snow.
Mm-hmm. Michael Dalcol, come on down.
A number of guys. He went kind of consensus when his scouts were telling him to pick someone else. It is what it is. It's the past. But I can appreciate that about Darsh, that he listens to his scouts. If that's the man they say to take, he just takes it. And one other note on the draft as a whole, we do know Darsh attempted a couple times to move up. It was for right-handed defensemen that went a bit before. It would have been moves I like. The offers we heard I would have been fine with, but it also makes sense why the team he was trying to trade with didn't make the trade, because at number 9, they also need defensemen. So It would have taken quite a bit to get that pick off their hands. I like the aggression. I like the attempts in the past two drafts to kind of move up. If you really like a guy, at least try. And it gives me confidence moving forward in drafts that if he really targets someone and if he really has the ammo, he's going to go get him. So I can appreciate that as well. But draft-wise, I have no issues with Matthew Darsh.
Okay. Asset management, another story. But, all right. So that was the draft. Any non-Islanders surprises, picks you liked?
Oh, well, the first surprise, I was shocked. Rudolph at 4, I thought that was crazy. I know Buffalo didn't have that pick until, what was it, like a couple days before. I'm not a huge Daxon Rudolph fan. I've spoken to a couple other people that aren't and really
watched. You know what, though? I'm excited for it because it was so off the board. And given how high he went, you're kind of like, all right, this guy may be playing sooner rather than later. And after the Bowen Byram situation, it's kind of like, all right, like, we're going to find out pretty quickly who's right and who's wrong about this prospect.
Well, that's the thing, too. I think a player like Chase Reed slips because he although many consider him the most talented defenseman in the draft, he's kind of the furthest away out of the high-level defensemen, like out of Smits, Carls, even Rudolph, Gustafsson, might be missing a name, Verhoeven. Like, I think Reed might be the farthest away. Like, Reed might need 2 to 3 years. Where a guy like Smits, who the Rangers took at 5,
he might start right away.
He might play this year. If not, he might play the following year. Gustafsson, who we took at 13, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't be surprised.
Next year.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the lineup next year.
Next year.
This year, no. I think he's already pretty much scheduled to go back to Sweden. But he's just such a good skater. He's got the big body already. You're not going to worry about him size-wise at all. So I could definitely see him playing. I actually think, and this is not a knock on Aitchison, but I think Gustafsson, despite being basically a year younger, is closer than Aitchison because he doesn't have to work on as much in his own end. So it'll be interesting. But Reed was a good pick despite being raw. I thought San Jose had an amazing draft. I love what they did. I love that they made moves before to basically enable them to comfortably take Stenberg.
Dude, Celebriniberg is going to be disgusting.
Yeah, but think about it. It's not just Celebriniberg.
Oh, I know.
It's Celebrini, Stenberg, Michael Smith. Misa, who they took number 2 last year.
Will Smith.
Will Smith.
And then I still can't believe they traded Eklund.
I mean, they get the defenseman in that deal.
I know.
Take number 9, you get Verhoeven. So, great draft by San Jose. I feel like not that they ruined it a couple days later, but very sus moves a couple days later, not only getting at Bo Horvat money, but also trading for Darnell Nurse with no retention.
Yeah.
And I you want to protect the young guys. Totally understand that. But at what cost? Like, that's crazy. And I know people say
apparently $17 million.
Yeah. Miles and miles of cap room. Who cares? I mean, eventually when you get good, it's going to come back to bite you. Look at Anaheim. But it's not Shark's house.
We'll get to them. We'll get to Anaheim.
Well, that's a separate story.
Absolutely nuts. Okay. Free agency.
Yeah, the one big – I mean, they did make a couple moves. Matias Michelli, they got Chaffee, right? Who else did they get that was a depth player?
I mean, they signed a few
Vanacek guys. I like the Vanacek move because it's a backup goalie, but it's a backup goalie that allows you to play Varley as well, see what's going on with Varley. But I was the first to say with Darsh, you cannot go into the season just with Varley. It's ridiculous. So getting
that, I mean, surely.
But no one was going to come. Like, the top level backups weren't coming.
Surely this means that Gamson comes next year. They're going to pay the buyout and just be done with it.
Potentially.
Vanacek on 1 year and a 38-year-old off a double knee replacement surgery to back up your guy who doesn't exactly have the most stellar record for, I'll say, endurance throughout the course of a season.
Well, he's had his own health things too.
Yeah.
And at one point it was the back too. So that's something it could be 100% for years and you just kind of always have it in the back of your mind.
Yeah, trust me, I know.
Yeah,
I know. So, I mean, to me, this offseason just screams Gamson next year.
Yeah, I mean, it would line up because you have Varley expiring, right? You have Vanacek just on the 1. But we know how it works with backup goalies. I mean, whether Gamson comes or not, you could always find a Rittich type or
– I get it, but like how many years are we going to do this before
– Yeah.
But whatever. Michelli signing. I mean, Michelli again, was great. It's like – I'm trying to bite my tongue here.
No such thing as a bad one-year deal, in my opinion.
No, so, and again, like what, he's going to be an RFA after this season?
Yeah, actually. He's only 25. So, I like that gamble.
I like the gamble. I also think, like, listen, if he overperforms and your team stinks, you could probably get some good return at the deadline for him.
And if he's just not good, he's gone. That's it.
I again, like, not to be negative Nancy, which I never am, so I don't know why anyone would say anything. But, again, I'm not saying, like, this is reminiscent of Drouin or a Shabanov situation. Like, every situation is different, but it's like, again, like, Islanders fans love to just be like all roses and butterflies and rainbows about like the 1 year, let's take a chance on this guy, and oh, surely he's gonna work out because look at this potential. It's like, well, if that was the case, he wouldn't be here on a 1 year deal. So I like the upside, I do. I'm just not gonna paint like this unbelievable picture. Like, great middle six addition if it works. great. I love the gamble by the GM. It's hardly a gamble. It's pretty much all upside. Mm-hmm. So like no complaints, but I'm not going to be posting, you know, 10-minute videos about why this guy is like definitely going to work. And I love the upside and look at the offense. Like there are a lot of scouts who are just like, I don't want anything to do with this guy because I think he's lazy.
Yeah. Well, it'll never be as much of an overreaction as Leafs fans last year being like, we don't need Marner. We got Michelli.
That tweet will live in hockey Twitter Hall of Fame.
What was it? It was like Michelli.
Marner replacement. Yeah, like, it was one of the replacements.
And Domi, yeah. Maybe? Something like that. We're like, yeah. We got these guys. We're good. But right. Yeah, I like the Michelli pickup. I like the moves as a whole because it gives you flexibility. You picked up some guys. You picked up some talent. What I've been begging them to do, use your pro scouting, much like the Penguins last year.
It's going to be a great reevaluation year.
Yeah, you're reevaluating the evaluation.
Correct.
So, but you know what? I'm with it because we would be the first two if Darsh had doubled down and said, well, I just bought Chen and now I want to go get more vets and do this and do that and lock guys into big money over term. We wouldn't have been happy. So if this is the plan to give a couple guys one-year deals, see how things go, let this season play out, go off that, I'm totally fine with it. I like the free agency just from a flexibility standpoint, just from a, I don't want to call it playing it safe, but playing it smart, just giving out a couple 1-year deals, not locking yourself in.
I mean, to be fair, the guy pretty much pigeonholed himself into this situation with his trade deadline.
He did, but at the same time,
you're not going to go out there. You don't even have the, not that he would come here anyway, but you barely had enough room for a Marchment.
No, I know, but you also,
yeah, like, you could ship guys out to make room, but
he didn't. You know, he let Lee walk, which I think once everyone saw the deal Lee got, mostly everyone agreed with. You know, you just didn't double down, and that was my main thing because I knew they were going to kind of be handcuffed going in. So just don't double down on a core that's kind of already shown it's not good enough. Let's see what we have. Let's build through prospects. Let's draft. Let's develop. So if that's the plan, I'm totally fine with it. But just follow through. Like, no half measures. So if you're on the cusp next year, you shouldn't be a heavy buyer.
I think I'm going to be stressed until next year's deadline.
No, absolutely. You can always be stressed. And, you know, I think with a lot of professional sports organizations, there's always going to be that pressure, especially the markets that aren't huge, to, if you do have an opening, take it, because we want the gate, we want the playoff sales, we want this, all these things that come with making a run. So I get that side of it, but I do think Darsh's vision now is sort of, okay, let's let it play out. And unless we're truly, truly in there, I'm not going to go hot and heavy trying to buy, because we knew last that, I mean, the attempts to buy went well above and beyond just Braden Chen. I mean, he was going after a couple of the better Blues players that would have costed more. Maybe that would have been a better move. Who knows? Doesn't matter anymore. But just, I can appreciate the way he went about it. That's all I'll say. Because if he would have given out a 3-4-5-year deal to a guy that's 30 years old, I don't know if I'd be too happy about that. He didn't make any drastic trades that gave up future assets, so happy about that. Just one step at a time. Now, I know we talked about free agency, but there has been other rumors that have come out, basically confirmed that Darsh is trying to move out some money. So obviously when we say that, we know we're talking about guys like Duclair, guys like Romanov. Now, if he's able to make a move and dump some of that salary, because keep in mind, that salary is not just this year. Duclair, I believe, is this and next, and Romanov is this and eternity. So so it's not like, it's not money that's just on the books next year. So if Darsh is able to pull that off, I'll be very happy. I would consider it a successful offseason. Right now, I consider it solid.
What do you think of the Romanov rumors? Because I'm kind of the opinion at this point, like, NHL GMs are very dumb. I know that he probably wants to recoup a first for Romanov. I think he's better off waiting. I just don't think the stock could possibly go any lower, both in terms of play as well as injury. And if the cap keeps going up and teams need that cost-effective defenseman, as long as Romanov like doesn't get hurt and like is slightly better than dog shit, which is what he was before he got hurt last year, like I'd rather kind of just hold him and ride it.
You get that side, but
also like could be a good tank commander.
Here's the thing. So I agree with you. His value is in the dumps. If he plays well and you want to move him at the deadline,
that's
more value. What?
Plays well.
Plays better. You know what you just said, as long as he's not
better than dog shit.
If he goes back to Romanov pre-contract, let's say that.
Analytically, before the injury, he was like the worst defenseman in the NHL.
Okay, let's just say he plays better. If he comes back, he plays better, he's healthy. My biggest worry is the health has always been an issue. Feels like he pops his shoulder out or something happens.
And this is my concern with Pelech, and yet here we are. We're going to gamble his health for another 6 months.
But we know there. You know, you don't just move everyone. You see Chicago with Connor Bedard, and I constantly mention this. Like, as much as everyone wants to just say, strip it down, rebuild, build around Schaefer, it's not as easy as that because you miss a couple picks. Suddenly it gets really ugly, and you're trading the fourth overall for Bowen Byram and giving him a So you got to be careful with what you wish for. And I totally understand not completely stripping it down, but I would like to see a strategic move this summer because I think you're gambling again, right? Like we just said, like if you go into the season, you don't move Romanov, you don't move Pelech, even if you don't move Duclair, you just run with everything you have right now. It is a risk, right? Because if Duclair just is not playing well again, if Romanov gets hurt again or Romanov's not playing well again, the value will remain low and basically maybe be immovable on some of these guys. So I think you do have a little bit of an avenue here to trade a Romanov and get out of that deal and get out of it in future years. And I think it would be wise because what we just discussed with the draft, right? You're pretty set on the left side going forward. Obviously, maybe they don't all work out, but the strongest part of your prospect pool is the left side. Your best prospects outside of maybe Eklund are Gustafson, Aitchison. You have a young player in George. You can very much survive moving Romanov this year. All it takes is playing Isaiah George in his spot. And you get all that money off the books. Yeah. So everyone's talking about this 40 mil or whatever it is next summer where you could play around, give an offer sheet, try to sign a free agent, what have you. Suddenly 46 or you move Duclair to 49. That's another big time player added to an already 40 million that you get to play around with. So I would try to move it now. I wouldn't run the risk because you don't want an immovable deal. And I believe Romanov's protection hits July 1 next year, right? So God forbid he does get banged up again. There might be a world where no one wants him by then because like they're going to say, see?
Yeah.
It keeps happening where now teams are willing to take a chance because they see the prices being handed out. They see the term to older players than Romanov. So I think you can move him now. I think you can get value. I don't blame Darche for holding and try to get a little bit better value than he's been offered so far. Totally get that.
This is a gamble I'm more comfortable taking than Pelech.
Like waiting.
Wish Pelech was off the roster right now.
And it's not because of who Pelech is as a player.
It's because he's on the wrong side of 30. He finally had a healthy season. He's not going to be here theoretically for what this team's next competitive window if, you know, you're about to go into an off season that's pivotal and hopefully have way more draft picks and 40 million cap space. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
And you're a defenseman that provides zero offense. So.
Well, I think it's one of those. I think Pelech is going to be on this roster no matter what come September.
I agree. I don't want it though. So
yeah, I get it. But I think he's going to thrive. He has potential to thrive even more under DeBoer. Like DeBoer is going to kind of have them playing the type of hockey Pelech likes a bit more. So we'll see. But I think Pelech's here. I think Romanov and Duke are kind of up in the air. And I might put Romanov as more likely to be moved than Duke, to be honest.
Probably.
I think Romanov actually has some decent value where Duke, it's kind of just like a cap dump. Put him on a team. And he still has, I believe, 16 team modified. So you can't just send him anywhere. You can't just say, hey, Vancouver, like you literally have no one. You want to take him for 2 years?
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't waive. So, and from what I heard, he kind of wants to play on a decent team, on a winner, like every single player in the NHL that's in their late 20s, right? So
they don't want you, bro.
Yeah. So I think Romanov's the most likely, but I think the most likely scenario as a whole is that they're all on the roster come September.
Yeah. All right, what else before we get into
Just Q&A. Maybe we'll jump into potential ads, because there have been some names out there linked to the Islanders in Patrick Line, the Patricks, Line
the A Patricks.
And Kane.
One with a C, one without a C.
So Patrick Line A, Patrick Kane, how would you feel about either addition?
Love both on a one-year deal.
I agree. Both either on a one-year deal is fine.
Kane is like my current future Islander white whale of this free agency in terms of like who's available. Like, I've wanted this guy on my team forever. I wanted him when he got traded to the Rangers. I wanted him when he went to Detroit. Like, I USA legend at the age of what, 37, 38, he's still putting up close to 60 points after he's had like major hip surgeries. Guy's a legend. He's a baller. Wants to play with Barzal, and it's like, listen, if this team is going to kind of stink and we're really like don't have much in the terms of offensive upside, hell yeah.
I just think too, when you look at the rock, like when you look at this forward group, like when you write it down now, it's kind of hard to put it together and not have Duke in the everyday lineup and have a guy like one of these guys, like a Chaffee or whoever they picked up, kind of be the extra man. But I think if you add one, whether it's Line A or Kane, and you put them in the line, it just balances everything out much nicer.
It would be real tidy work to jettison Duclair for whatever you could get and then just sign Patrick Kane 1 year for $4 million.
And I was against Line A for a while because I just think,
you know what, even at this age, you know what you're getting with Kane. Line A, I feel like, is way more of a gamble.
There's a world where you sign Line A and like five games in, you're like, F this.
Yeah.
Like, just go to Europe type.
He doesn't strike me as a DeBoer player.
No, me either. And
neither does Kane, but at least Kane is more guaranteed offense.
Kane
doesn't play a lick of defense at this point in his career.
No, but you could put, like, I'm trying to, like, what would line one be? It would be Barzal, Kane, and then maybe you just throw a Heinemann in there, just do the dirty work type line. And then you could have a line two of Horvat. Maybe you put Eklund with Horvat. And then like a Holmstrom on the other wing, things like that. And then suddenly you go down the forward lines and you're like, this is actually pretty good. And the defense isn't bad. Like, if you get that one forward add and you hit, and Quincelli could play on that second line too, perhaps. But if you get that one forward add and you hit, suddenly this is a team that you, not saying they make a ton of noise, but they could kind of be in a similar spot where they maybe could grab a wild card if the Metro is not great. But that's the problem overall too. And I think we agree on this. When you look at the teams around them and what they added. I mean, the Capitals finished last season, I think, just maybe a couple points behind the Islanders.
They are going to be a problem.
Yeah. So basically they're running back the same team, which was young. They get Hudson for a full year, who already looks nasty. Leonard a year older. You have other young guys like Baby Protas is just going to be there. And then you add Alex Tuck and Jordan Kyrou. Along, who did they add to that we were like?
Ovi's back for a year.
Ovi's back for a year, but they added someone. Was it Boone Jenner? They added two. That's like a nice Boone Jenner. So they've definitely added a lot up front.
That contract was atrocious, but whatever.
Yeah, but when you're the Caps and you're trying to win right now, why not, right? Because the cap's going to keep going up. You have these young guys on ELCs. That's when you capitalize. That's why when people say it with the Sharks, like, oh, who cares? You do get it to an extent because they have all these guys on ELCs. And then when the ELCs are up, then you're going to get rid of these guys. So it's not going to totally kill you. So
yeah.
That side I get with the Caps.
Well, and now with the cap going up in these offer sheet shenanigans, it's a bit, little more precarious.
This is what I talk about with the Darsh moves. I think he's setting himself up that he could have a Caps-like offseason next year where you open up the cap, you get the picks, your prospects are coming up.
No.
He could, but
the Capitals' prospect system was infinitely better than ours. They were a better team.
Right now, but it's years ahead, too.
So I don't think it's going to be a 1 year and we're talking Capitals.
No, but they also don't have the –
we haven't even seen Cristal yet.
They don't have the superstar we just drafted.
Yeah, but they got dudes.
Yeah, they have
a lot of dudes.
We have like the franchise piece that just jump starts everything. So it's a little different, but I really think if played right, the Isles could have a similar offseason to the Caps. But again, the problem in the Metro is I feel like just about everyone got better. I don't know if the Rangers got better because they just
– Columbus didn't.
What's that?
Columbus didn't.
Columbus didn't, but Columbus didn't get – like when Columbus was about to trade Werenski and potentially trade Marchenko, you're like, oh, they're going to stink. They kept both. They're probably going to keep both. So they'll be right around us at the very least, I would say.
Yeah, I think
Rangers will be around us. Carolina will win the Metro. That's – Devils got better.
Yeah.
Devils got better. Caps got better. Don't remember who they added off the top of my head, but I feel like the Penguins got a little better, and they have a nice little young group going there too. So it's just teams in front of us that are going to be hard to catch and teams that were around or behind us that got better than we did. So at least on paper. And on paper only means so much, but it's not going to be easy in the Metro. I think last year we went through the season saying the Metro is very average. It's not great. It's the worst it's been. It got energized real quick because I think it's going to be pretty good this year. And then you have teams on the other side in the Atlantic that got better as well. Like, I don't think they're going to be great, but you even look at a Leafs team. They sign Radish. They're keeping
I think they're like
Matthews, McKenna.
Very much a playoff dark horse.
They could make the playoffs, but I don't expect them to make a ton of noise. But, yeah, they definitely added vets where they could just be a solid team and contend for the playoffs. Florida, who – I feel like people forget Florida wasn't in the playoffs. So that's another team that's – you might as well write them into the playoffs.
They're going to be disgusting.
They have so many guys that are going to be a pain to play against. So the East as a whole is much better. So although we could hope and prey on some of the young guys getting better, and maybe that's what helps us jump, I just think so many other teams in the East got better. So it's going to be tough.
And they did.
And the Isles just have to play it safe. And I think this was the first step in the offseason. The next step will be how you react in season.
Yeah. All right, let's get some questions. Patreon.com/Isles House, Discord questions. First one from Kev. Where do you guys see the team finishing if this is what they're going to look like heading into the season? This is a last place or second to last place team.
In the
Metro.
Oh, in the Metro?
I mean, didn't specify, but I'm assuming Metro.
In the Metro. Unfortunately.
We'll do the whole preseason pod closer to the
Carolina's
season.
Carolina's better.
I think Washington's better. Devils are better. I think the Rangers are better. I think Pittsburgh's better. I think the Flyers are better.
Yeah. Yeah, the Flyers too.
I mean, again, is there a world in which like Simon Holmstrom and Cal Ritchie take these monumental leaps and all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, cool.
Declan's maybe a stud right away. Right. Like, there's a world. Like we could be – there's a world where we're kind of like the Penguins. Michelli plays well and he's our Anthony Mantha.
Sure.
Like, there's things like that could happen. Sorokin stands on his head again, of course. But as of now in July, looking at the teams on paper, yeah, like the sixth or seventh in the Metro as of right now.
Yeah.
Things could change. You make an addition. Injuries happen, but I would say around there right now.
All right. From SP, do you see the Isles making a trade before the season starts, and who do you think said trade will involve?
If they do make one, I think it would be subtracting more so than adding a player at this point. They do kind of have a full roster.
I think it's Duclair.
Yeah, I could see it being – I could see it Duclair or Romanov, I'd say. I'll say Romanov just to – could be a little different there.
I think
Romanov's more likely.
I think Romanov is very, very much on the block, but I think Darsh is going to hold firm at a price that not many, if anyone's willing to pay, which is why I think it's just Duke is the easy.
Yeah, but you know what I will say on the Romanov situation? I could see a scenario after all these RFAs sign and they're like teams still holding out hope. Like maybe there's a team like the Flyers that didn't get Nurse after talking about him for a while. And then when Anaheim, we think, is going to match that deal and they miss out on Carlson, maybe they turn around and say, you know what, we could move a conditional pick for this player now.
Right.
That's kind of our last option at this point. So I could see it being where once all these RFAs play out come mid to late July, that there's a little more movement and someone finally bites the bullet on Romanov. So that's kind of why I said I'd put Romanov as the most likely.
Sure. From NY Isles 00, I think the Islanders did a good job so far this offseason. What else do you see them doing? Not much.
Not much. Maybe a one-year deal. I think they'll wait out those two players that we mentioned. Off the top of my head, I don't really know anyone else that would
be out. I mean, really, it's the Kane line A dominoes that need to fall somewhere.
Like defensively, when you look at them, they have – on the right side, they have – Polak, Scotty, Tony. On the left side, they have Schaaf, Pelech, Romanov, and basically kind of George as the extra in limbo right now. So there's not even room in the D group unless you make a trade. And even with the forward group, like, they have a lot of forwards. Like, if you have a guy that potentially moves the needle, go get him. But I don't see them adding another depth guy because where does he fit in? And who would – I don't see many guys signing a one-way deal just to get waived. So I think unless someone's moved out or one of the Patricks accept a one-year deal, I think it's similar roster to what we see today.
From Zach, is a Romanov-Pelech trade imminent with all the cap space next summer but a weak free agent class? How is Darch going to spend it? Well, I'll tell you what. We kind of spoke about Romanov-Pelech already, so we'll talk the cap space one. Matthew Darch bragging about having what amounts to league-average cap space next year is very pathetic. And a lot of that money is going to be used on his own guys. So I don't know what the braggadocious attitude is in that. I'm sorry. That's what he was doing. He was putting out positive PR. Like, hey, guys, look at all this cap space I'm going to have with a dog shit free agent class. It's going to be used on his guys. It's going to go to a Simon extension.
Heinemann.
Maybe Schaaf.
I think if certain, like, this is the thing. Like, we always talk about free agent money, free agent classes, whatever. It almost never ends up that those guys make it to that class. Like, how often do you see, like, three or four premier players in a free agent class? Like,
never. And you know what? The only way to add those type of salaries is via trade, and he doesn't have the trade assets right now, which is why this is such a pivotal season.
I could see a scenario where first Kucherov's the top free agent. He's going to stay. But I think then the next guy's DeBrincat. Like, maybe, like, if a DeBrincat makes it to market, could we go?
He's not.
He probably won't.
I'm saying definitely not.
Okay. So, but that level of player,
like, based on the text that I got yesterday, no shot.
But I'm just saying, like, and if, you know, if the Islanders remain weak on that right side, is there a Darren Radish type guy that you can get at? Like, no matter what, even if the free agents aren't out there, it's always good to have cap space because it gives you leverage. You could retain for somebody else. Whatever you have to do, it's always a good thing to have it. It's just, you know, there has to be a plan, and obviously we'll see the plan unfold as time comes. I think a lot of the guys coming off the books for us won't even be options, really. They'll either kind of make their way and go ring chasing or retire or, you know, the Varleys, the Palmieris, the Palats, like those guys, I don't see them back beyond this year. Nothing against them. It's just kind of the way the team's headed. So,
yeah,
we'll see. The cap space, it's way too far out to guess, but it's definitely a good thing to have it. And if he could create more, even better. And as you said, in order to create more and actually make moves, if you want to land the guy, you do have to move some deals out.
From Robert, where would you like to see Richie play in the lineup? Do you think he should develop his center abilities on the third line or add some skill to the top six as a winger?
I think you run him as – I would run the centers, Barzal, Horvat, Richie, Pageau, put Shen on the wing, put Cizikas on Pageau's wing, put Shen on Richie's wing, and then put like the – like we said before, like I don't – I with Barzal, maybe you run like as of now, Michelli, Barzal, Heinemann, Horvat, Ekman, Holmstrom, things like that.
Yeah.
I want the young guys to each play with like a really solid, like Ekman should play with one of Barzal or Horvat, in my opinion, because that's where you want him to succeed in this league.
Yeah, but I also kind of want to see Ekman and Richie. I want to see Ekman and Richie selfishly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you will see it by year's end, and who knows, maybe if things don't go well, maybe you see Yzerman up and we have a little fun with Yzerman as well and some other kids that are in the AHL, like Aitchison, Plan D, and things like that. But I just think to start, like I'm trying to think of how they'll draw up the lines, and that's kind of what I see. Like Barzal, I think Heinemann will be with one of Barzal or Horvat because you need that guy digging out pucks. Holmstrom, maybe with the other, whichever one Heinemann's with, he's with the other one. And then you put the skill guys with them, like the small skill guys, Eklund, Michelli. That's kind of how I'd play it. Shen, Richie, and I don't know who on that third, and then Pageau, Cizikas, and whomever on the fourth. So I would put Richie 3C, I think, as because we have so many centers. You can't really put him 2C. Unless Barzal's going on the wing and Shen's going on the wing, you can't really put him 2C. And I think DeBoer seems pretty adamant he wants to start with Barzal at center, which I'm okay with. So I think 3C I'd put him. I want him at center. Because then you have to think of too in the post, which the day will come eventually, the post Horvat Barzell days. If Richie's not a center, who's like obviously they could come in some draft or something, but you have to develop some centers. We have Danny Nelson, but he projects as a bottom six center.
Danny Nelson projects as an AHL player.
You want to develop guys that are top six centers. So I would run them at center.
From Ryan, how does this team get better outside of the draft? I looked in free agents for 27 and 28. It's fairly slim, and that's before most guys resign. Other GMs around the league are making bold, all caps, moves and are not afraid to sell high. Do you guys agree that it just feels like Darche isn't picking a lane?
Well,
yeah, he's not picking a lane. I mean, he didn't pick a lane at all last year.
Well, now this is my thing with him going into the season. You have to pick a lane. And this is where I say I don't really think they should be buying heavy unless you're in like one of the top three of the Metro spots.
No.
I'm saying hypothetically. Because they're not
going to sell. If they are, they should not.
I wouldn't want them buying heavy regardless. I want them taking it slow, drafting, adding more picks, if anything, not subtracting. But I think the way you build, like you said, not through the draft. I think you kind of go like kind of what you saw other teams do this year. Say you pick high, say you pick top 10, and you're selling at the deadline and you add other picks. You don't need to make those back end of the first round picks. You could use them like the Caps did and go get a Jordan Kyrou-esque piece. You can use them and, you know, trade for someone's rights.
I mean, this is what pisses me off about last season too. Like, how much would you love Pavel Dorofeyev on the team right now?
Right, but it's just not the reality.
And it's not the reality, but it very easily should have been the reality, because instead of having one top 100 pick, this guy could have had at least three firsts had he sold, like the Capitals.
But he was never selling. And that selling was never happening. We knew
that. But he should have. You know that he should have.
Yes.
Forget about, oh, it was never happening. It's the what should have happened. It's the right thing to do.
To be honest with you, I'm trying to move forward.
I am not.
We've spoken about the deadline for so long. I just want to speak about the – I know it's always going to come back.
It is always going to come back. Let me say one thing about this, because – I know people are going to get sick and tired of me talking about it. It matters. Like, that is the type of deadline that sets a team back 2 to 3 years. It genuinely is. Like, yeah. To have that fool's gold of like, hey, we're going to buy. Like, we could do this. This is cool. Like, let's have a playoff game at UBS with Matthew Schaefer. That'll be a great experience, even though we would get fucking pummeled by the Hurricanes or whoever we would have played. Like, that is the type of deadline that sets you back. And we're already seeing the effects this offseason. So, yes, I'm going to keep talking about it until the guy's fired or he fixes what he messed up.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. And I think, like, sticking to the plan, like we keep talking about, that's this deadline. And we're going to be waiting, holding our breath until then, because we want to see what he does. And if he said, like, I think this season should all be all about the next 3 to 5 that come after it. Like, set yourself up. Don't go all in. Yes, you have Barzell. Yes, you have Horvat. Yes, you have Sorokin. But look what the Caps did. They sold. They sold Carlson, who's literally his number is going to be in the rafters there. They sold him. You have to make some tough decisions. It started with Lee, which to me had to be done, and we kind of saw coming, but he did end up letting him go. You didn't go crazy in the offseason. You didn't trade extra assets. You didn't double down on your deadline. So I think it's a lesson learned. I think maybe even Drouin was a lesson learned, where it's like, okay, we like this guy, but we're not giving out 3 years. We'll give out the one to Michelli. So
yeah,
you're going to have the cards you can play, but just play them when the time comes. Like, if you're not great going into the season, sell. You have to, like, do not say, oh, we're 4 points out, we're 6 points out, we get on a winning streak, we can get in there. Come deadline, you have to pick a true lane and do what's right for this team to build around Schaefer. As much as we like Horvat, Barzell, Sorokin, it's got to be about Schaefer, and that's drafting, developing, and or taking picks and adding young players. Because there is a world where maybe they're not great this upcoming year, but then they could get pretty good the following one. If you hit on an Eklund, if Gustafsson's ready, you get another couple high picks, and you make those, and those, you know, work out or at least add to your prospect pool. There is a world where you could be very, very, very nicely set up 1 year from today, but he just has to go through the proper motions.
See if he does it.
Yep.
from Josh. For someone who seems to be pretty decent at drafting, why does Darsh not stockpile more picks with obvious trade bait staring him in the face? Great question, Josh. Don't know what to tell you.
He's waiting to get his price.
It's because he was a barista. From Rob, is there another player not named Matthew Schaefer that Ethan doesn't have incredible hatred for? Plenty. Simon Holmstrom, Matt Barzell, Bo Horvat. I don't hate those guys. Love Ritchie. Those guys. Cal Ritchie, yeah.
Meal Heineman, obviously.
Meal Heineman. I like people like think I fucking hate this team. I just hate the GM and a select few players.
I mean, it's like a rite of passage when you root for a team to just get annoyed by certain players and certain things that go on. And
I don't hate. I don't hate Adam Pellick. I just want his ass traded.
Well, there's a difference. There's a difference, and I feel like sometimes things get misconstrued.
No, it's not misconstrued, Rocco. You just have to think about how stupid the average person is and realize that 50% of people are stupider than that.
Anyway, it's more of just the business deal. Like Adam Pellick. Like the player, he's on the wrong side. What is he, 32 now? How old is he?
31, I think 32, I'll say.
But has the injury history, but also has the value on the block right now. So I wouldn't have minded it, but I could see a scenario where the GM
– turning 32 this year.
Yeah, the GM and the coach sit down, and if DeBoer's
– it's a rough 32.
You know, he doesn't want to completely tank this year. No one wants to throw away a year. So it's probably how that conversation went. We can't move Pellick, and – perhaps that's why we're hearing Romanov's name out there now. Because, listen, if you could get any sort of value for Romanov, I will give him a round of applause. Which we know he can. It's just about what he actually agrees to do. Because I think they're worried, too, in the back of their minds, like, trading Romanov for a so-so pick and then him playing really well on another team. Because every GM worries about the blowback. But
Just trade him out west.
Trade him out west.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
It plays well. You don't have to hear about it.
Yep.
From the Brian Man, rank these one-parter. Rank these. I mean, it's kind of one-parter. Rank these in terms of most free agent, in terms of most FA least likely. I don't know what that means, but I think he just means rank these in whatever. One, trading Romy. Two, sign one of the Patricks. Three, trading for Kent Johnson. Please discuss what you would do as well.
I think Kent Johnson's the least likely.
Which is a shame.
I like Kent Johnson. I'm curious at the price there.
Me too. And you know what? I saw someone on Twitter today talking about how it like he's very very obviously this summer's genius.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Shout out whoever said that because I agree he could be this year's Zegras. I've always liked Kent Johnson. I thought he's like a fun player. He's got good size. I actually think he plays a pretty decent two way game. I watched when he was at Michigan. I watched him a good bit. He was solid player. High pick. I don't remember how high, but definitely a high pick. So I think that's why Columbus doesn't really want to get rid of him. Probably for the value they'll get right now. Kind of a similar situation to a Shane Wright where they drafted him so high, so it's hard to say.
That situation is a disaster, by the way.
Right. But it's just hard for these GMs to be like, okay, we'll take a third round pick for this guy we picked fifth overall a couple years ago. So yeah. I get that. But yeah, I mean, even Shane Wright, like the situation's not great. I wouldn't mind taking a chance on him either, but I would put those moves as least likely. What were the other ones? The signing one of the Patricks and the trade.
Yeah.
I might put signing one of the Patricks as the most likely because that's just kind of how dominoes.
It's the easiest to execute.
Easiest to execute, and dominoes just may fall that way. Kane wise, I'd imagine they have four and change to work with now. I don't know how much. Kane just might take the veteran, whatever the veteran deal is, where it's like 2.5, and then he can make bonuses.
Yeah, so, do the 10 game shenanigans.
Yeah, you could
defer it to next year.
But Line A, I'd imagine, would be cheap. Like Line A, you could probably, I'd imagine if you offered Line A one-year, $3 million deal, that's probably going to be the best he has on his table. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets even less. Yeah. But I think the Patricks are the most possible, then the Romanov deal, then Kent Johnson like trade. But I would love, I think that would be a great move, a Kent Johnson like trade. If you could buy. Like, if Kent Johnson cost you, like, next year's second or something like that, I'd be all over that.
Yeah, that's a trade I'm okay
especially
making.
Especially if you – I would really give him his flowers if, like, you moved Romanov and maybe – like, say you got a mid-round pick for Romanov and use that pick or a similar pick for Kent Johnson. Now we're talking.
Yeah. from Lyle. What is the most realistic player you can see the Isles send out this offseason? We've kind of spoken about this already. Mine's Duke. Yours is Romanov.
Yep.
Is Kane or Line A really realistic? From Alfredo, yes, I think it is.
I think somewhat, but I think when the dust settles, they'll probably both be elsewhere.
Yeah. T. Isaac 39, what do we think a realistic Schaefer extension looks like?
Oof. Do you think bridge or long-term?
That's the problem.
That's what's hard.
But it's not like a team preference. Like, this is going to be – all right, let's talk about this right now. I'm trying not to take up too much time. But, like, all the contracts that we're seeing, like, I feel like I've always been a fan of that Austin Matthews contract, like the high AAV short term. Get me like as many contracts as I can with a rising cap that's smart, it's good business. You've always, I think you coined the term, or maybe someone else did, and you kept saying it to me, but there's two types of contracts in the NHL. There's the give your agent a raise and a fire your agent contract.
Yeah.
And over the last few years, we have seen a ton of fire your agent contracts, which like, you just have to be more aware that we're not in the flat cap era anymore. And extending for $7, $8, $9 million on term is going to look really bad in a few years. And I understand, like, you know, for an NBA player or something like that, it's kind of the norm, especially in the NFL, right? You know, oh God, this guy's the highest paid quarterback now. Yeah. Like, how does that happen?
The latest.
But it's like, you knew this was coming. It was around the corner. And now with Leo Carlson, 5 years, $18 million. A lot of GMs are having that oh shit moment. Right. And for dude, I don't know what the next Schaefer contract looks like.
But the thing is, I agree with you with the Matthews statement. Like, take a 3, 4, 5 year deal and max out. But you could really only do that if you're a star, because a guy like a McDavid, a guy like a Matthews, they could do it, because even if, God forbid, they got injured.
Yeah, but McDavid didn't even – yeah, but you're correct. McDavid didn't even do it properly.
No, I know, but I'm just saying you could – like, there's a – like, Schaefer is the type of player that he could take 3 years, $15
million. Yeah.
And even if one of those years didn't go according to plan, the next deal will be $20 million or whatever money's up to at that point. But, yeah, I think we're going to see some contracts go crazy. I think this Leo Carlson deal changed the game for a lot of people.
I mean, what does McCarr go for next summer?
McCarr's going to take a little bit of a break because he's like from the school of Crosby and McKinnon. So he's already on a winner. He'll probably take a little bit of a cut. But teams like the Ducks, teams like San Jose that just have these high-level draft picks, like, they got to be careful. Because even if you think about the Sharks, next year they could – can they? I think they can. Yeah, they could extend Celebrini now, right? Because this year was his second. So they could extend him now. It's tough, right? Like, you want to get that Celebrini deal done because you might get handcuffed next year and then say, oh, this team just offer-sheeted Celebrini $20 million, but if we give Celebrini $20 million, now we can't pay Will Smith. Right. And then after that, years down the road, we have to pay Misa. We have to pay Stenberg. So it gets a little tricky, and you want to handle it in-house before another team even gets the shot to do it. So it will be interesting. I'm not worried about Chief when it comes to offer sheets and things like that, but I'm just mostly curious whether it's long-term or a bridge. I'm not too worried about either and how it affects his long-term situation with the team, but it's just more curiosity and the number he's going to get on said deal. Because,
yeah,
I mean, just to throw one out there, okay, if he takes a bridge, maybe like a 3x15. Does that sound fair on a bridge?
No.
And if he goes long term, like what Leo Carlson just is going to get, like give him 18. Because by the time it actually hits, it's not going to be that crazy. Like 18 years.
I think he gets more.
Maybe. I mean, if Schaefer approaches you and it's like, listen, I'll sign max term 7 years, but I want $20 million. Probably just give it to him.
Easy.
I think 20 is the max right now. So by the time his deal hits,
I think it's 20.8. But
yeah. So by the time his deal hits, the max will be. But obviously, I wouldn't be surprised. He's such a good kid too. I wouldn't be surprised if he just takes like, even if he signs long term, takes like a 7x18.
I'm not buying that. But
I don't know. We'll see. He said, you know what it is with him too.
It's a business.
It's business, but he's got so many endorsements. He's so marketable. Like.
the amount of goodwill he's brought this piece of shit franchise, he should just take him to the woods.
No, listen, I'm just going off what I feel from him. Like, I could just see it being like, he's going to get a bag, but I could just see it being a little less than, like, say Celebrini gets 18 or 19 the year before. I could just see him saying, just match that. I don't care about market value. That's totally fine.
We'll see.
But no matter what, I'm not too worried.
All right, let's just rapid fire through these from James. Any chance Darsh does anything else before camp?
Yes,
we've spoken about it.
But yeah. I would lean no.
Based on moves so far from Steven B, based on moves so far, where would you have us finishing in the Metro? Second to last?
Yeah, between six or seven right now.
Yeah. From Scuds, do you think there have been any trade offers that include a first round pick for Pelech or Romanov? No.
No, because I think Romanov would be done. And
yep,
no on Pelech, because I don't think they truly shopped him.
Yeah. That's it.
All right.
We're good. Thank you all for listening. Don't know what the summer schedule is going to be like, but we do have a good guest for next week. So I hope you all tune in for that. That's all. We'll talk to you soon. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around. Iowa's house in the middle of